Welcome, friends. You are listening to the Mind Body Alchemy Podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie Miramontes. This is where intuition meets education in the realms of spirituality, fitness, mindset, and more, all to create lasting change. Welcome back to the podcast, and thanks so much for being here. We're going to talk about something today that I personally had a little bit of a struggle with, and once I understood it, it was a game changer. We are going to talk all about feelings. I want to preface this episode by saying that I did not think that I was an emotional eater. I did not, and I totally was. In my experience, most people don't realize that they're emotional eaters, and this isn't because it's some sneaky, sinister thing, although kinda, but it's for a much more obvious reason that people are just now starting to talk a little bit more about. And if you're gaining weight or you're having trouble losing weight, it's most likely because you're an emotional eater. Well, let me back that up, because everyone is an emotional eater on some level, everyone. But if you're struggling with these things, then you are an emotional overeater. There are some exceptions to this related to health and medications and things like that. But even in those exceptions, there is often emotional overeating happening as well. The behavior is then stacked. And being an emotional eater is not a bad thing. It's not a moral failing. This is not a reason to shit on yourself. And if you don't quite connect with being an emotional eater, stay tuned. Let me see if I can convince you. I know that sounds like a weird thing, but there is a reason for it. It is much more common to be an emotional overeater than not, because of our society, because of food availability, and because we have trained our brain to seek relief really quickly and easily and efficiently. And food actually does that. So again, this is not about beating yourself up or comparing or thinking, well, now I'm broken and this is another thing I have to shit on myself about. That's not what we are doing here. This is about awareness so that you can develop a skill set to change. Okay, so hang in with me. One other thing that I'll mention is that with the conversation around weight loss injections becoming more and more common, one thing we're learning more about is this phenomenon called food noise, or being referred to as food noise. This isn't some scientific term, I don't think, but it's something people are talking a lot about right now, is this food noise that the medications are helping them overcome, or when they're off the medications, it comes back, or something that they thought would go away with the medications and it's not, and things like that. So I really want to focus on what we can control here. We can't always control what medications we have to be on, what health conditions we have, or whether or not we have this food noise phenomenon, which is an episode for another day. We can talk about why some might experience more food noise than others, and some of the ways you might be able to help yourself through that, and some of the ways that you may just need more compassion and understanding about how it affects you. The only reason I mention it here is because I'm not dismissing it as a reason why weight loss is so hard for so many people, why we have such abysmal rates of success long term. But like other medical conditions and experiences and exceptions to the emotional eating conversation, often food noise is interwoven with emotional eating. Now, onto what we can actually control once you're aware of it. The reason many don't realize that they're emotional eaters is the same reason I didn't, because they're only focused on three or four emotions. These three or four emotions are what I refer to as blanket emotions or umbrella emotions. They cover a wide range of emotions that we may be experiencing, but I don't know what your childhood was like. I don't know what your upbringing was like, but I really didn't learn a lot about an emotional language growing up. I wasn't really sat down and taught about more than just these handful or less of emotional experiences that humans have. It's much more efficient and convenient for the brain to think about these three to four emotions than it is to really pick apart the nuance. These three to four emotions may be the feelings we most often have the language for, but it's typically a bit more detailed than that. These umbrella emotions are usually mad, sad, happy, and maybe stressed. They are common descriptors for how we're feeling, right? If somebody asks you, how are you doing? We're just like, good, I'm sad, I'm pissed, I'm mad, right? All the same words for the same feeling, like pissed, angry, mad, all that's the same, right? The same with sad, bummed, feeling a little down. They all mean the same thing. These are the common descriptors. This is just how we communicate with each other. While all eating is emotional to some degree, even if you're just eating because you're hungry, even if you're eating because it's convenient, even if you're just eating to get it over with, there is usually some emotional experience that is happening along with our eating. Even though that's true, the version of emotional eating that many people don't identify with is the Hollywood version, the crying in your ice cream over a breakup or a lost job. We've all seen it on television. We all kind of think like, that's an emotional eater. We know exactly what that means when we see a scene like that. But we don't necessarily identify as that kind of emotional eater. Some of you might. You may experience some of that, and that is a-okay. But if you have never identified as an emotional eater and you think this is just some willpower thing, some discipline thing, some I'm broken kind of thing, then it's helpful to understand that this is much bigger than just that one experience. You might even be sitting there saying that stressful experiences like that actually shut your appetite down and you stop eating because of them. Maybe you have gone through a divorce or something really tragic or difficult and you lost weight instead of gained weight, and so you couldn't possibly be an emotional eater, right? And for most people, high levels of emotional distress does shut down hunger and appetite because of adrenaline and other things that are going on, chemical reactions in our body. But when the adrenaline drops back down and life normalizes a bit, the hunger and appetite come back, which is normal, which is what's supposed to happen. Although sometimes it acts kind of like a slingshot effect, sort of like if you had gone on a really restrictive diet and then all of a sudden food looks good to you again, tastes good to you again, and it's really hard to stop eating it. But again, another episode for another day. Unless you're on the verge of a breakdown or going through one of these big stressful experiences, most of us experience stress and discomfort on a much smaller but more frequent scale. It happens all day, every day. So if emotional eating isn't just like downing a whole bag of chips because you're an unlovable slug and nobody likes you, then what is it? Well, it's a million things, but I'm going to break it down for you by asking two main questions. And in these questions, of course, I'm going to ask a bunch of other questions, but this is really to get you thinking about what your relationship is with food and overeating. So question one is, when was the last time you ate something when you weren't hungry? Go back there. I want you to think about it. Could have been 5 minutes ago. Could be happening right now. Could have been a long time ago. But just go back. When was the last time that you ate something when you weren't hungry? When was the last time you were hungry? Some of us dieters haven't experienced hunger in years. We kind of think our hunger signals are broken because we're always eating these mini meals and snacking and picking and yo-yoing back and forth. And the only hunger we've experienced is when we're playing the hunger games and trying to starve ourselves. And so we think it's just extreme or non-existent. But I just really want you to kind of take yourself back there, even if it's right now. Why did you eat it? Why did you eat when you weren't hungry? What were you doing? Where were you and who were you with? What was going on at that time? And what did you choose to eat? When we think about what eating is for, it's to satisfy our physical cues, right? We get hungry. We're supposed to eat when we're hungry. We meet our needs for energy. We meet our needs for nutrients. There's always some pleasure thrown in unless you're just eating something that's terrible and then there's no pleasure. But generally, food is a pleasurable experience that we all share. But if we're eating outside of those physical cues, something had to nudge you to get off your chair and go get it. Whether you're eating by the clock, which is just maybe an environmental cue, the clock strikes noon, must be lunchtime. Maybe you only have lunch at a certain hour and things like that. Those are more practical reasons why you might eat when you're not hungry. And we can work with that. We can work on making sure that you invite hunger to those meals. But sometimes it's just an environmental trigger. The food was just there. My coworkers were eating. It's what everybody was doing. It's what I always do. Maybe you have developed a habit of taking a break at a certain period of time. And eating is the only way that you allow yourself to have that break without feeling guilty. So you're seeking the feeling of rest and you're avoiding the feeling of guilt. So maybe you walk downstairs to your office coffee shop and you grab a latte and you grab a cookie. And this gives you some kind of break and it's justified because you're quote unquote doing something, but it's still connected to a feeling. You're not hungry. You're just looking for something. Oftentimes, it's about avoiding something. It's about boredom. Sometimes it's about insecurity and inadequacy. And rarely do we recognize that these are the feelings connected to what is driving our eating behavior. For me, it showed up as procrastinating. On the day I realized that I really was an emotional eater, I remember sitting at my kitchen counter and I was answering emails. And I got an email where I realized I was going to have to write quite a bit. This totally could have been a phone call, and it would have been faster if I spent a half an hour talking to this person instead of responding via email. I'm like, oh boy, this is going to be a doozy of a response. We really need to dive in here. And next thing I know, I'm standing in front of my refrigerator. Of course, it's only a few feet away. I looked in the refrigerator and I went, Steph, what the hell are you doing here? Are you hungry? No, you literally just ate a couple of hours ago. What's going on? What are you looking for? And I realized I was delaying. I was putting off responding to that email because I knew it was going to take me a long time. And instead of just moving on to something else or buckling down and getting it done, I decided to find myself a pleasant little distraction. In that moment, of course, I shut the fridge and gave myself a good old-fashioned talking to and got my shit together and answered the email. But it was so eye-opening to me. This wasn't a big emotional experience. I wasn't crying. I wasn't upset. I wasn't really frustrated or stressed or mad or overwhelmed. I just didn't want to answer the email in that moment. I guess maybe overwhelm fits here a little bit. I was just like, wow, this is going to take a long time. And my brain solved the problem for me. Go do something else. More pleasant, more fun. It's right there. A few feet away. Go. Have at it. That was fascinating to me, and I'm wondering if you can relate to anything similar. Oftentimes when I'm working with working moms, they will get off work, come home, pick up the kids get out of school, and they find themselves rummaging for snacks, not because they're hungry, but because they have a second job that is about to start. And they're trying to give themselves a little rest, a little recovery time in between. They don't really need a snack. They don't need an energy re-up. They're just looking for that break. They're looking for a little relief between job number one and job number two, taking care of kids, starting dinner, handling the housework, entertaining their partners, doing all of the things. And they don't realize that this is what is bridging the gap and helping them tolerate the discomfort that they're feeling, the guilt that they're feeling that they don't want to do all these things, the overwhelm that they're feeling that they have so much to do, and the frustration that they're feeling that no one is helping them. The food is just a distraction. It's just a little relief. But nobody's recognizing that. They're not standing in front of the pantry grabbing handful after handful of chocolate chips saying, I'm doing this because I really resent my kids because they don't take care of themselves. And I'm really annoyed that I'm the one who has to do dinner all the time. And I'm really burnt out and I'm tired and I would just love some time to myself. That's not what's happening. They just think that they have an overeating problem. They just think that sugar is addictive, that chocolate calls their name. Sometimes they recognize they're stress eating, but do they realize that they're eating because they feel resentful, because they feel guilty or overwhelmed? Of course not. Those feelings are way too uncomfortable. So question two is, when was the last time you ate past neutral or lightly full in your stomach? When was the last time you overate? Even by a little bit, you're just like, ugh, that was a little too much. Ugh, I'm feeling a little stretched out there. I was heavy. I could have gone without that last piece of pizza, or I should have left those fries behind. Now, you may not even be having that conversation. That's usually what happens at the early stages, like, ugh, I ate too much. And then you just move on. You don't think much about it, which is fine. That's what we're supposed to do, is just move on. But when it's a habit, then we stop recognizing how often we're doing it. So again, I'll ask, why did you overeat? What was in the extra bites that weren't in the first? Why not just stop at satisfied? Why not stop at lightly full? What are we getting out of clearing our plates? I can guarantee you there's an emotion there. Many of us learn to clear our plates growing up as kids. We are members of the Clean Plate Club. We carry that card proud, and getting rid of it is terrifying. Again, because of guilt. What would my mom think? Oftentimes when I work with people, they do a really good job of starting to overcome the whole Clean Plate Club idea. They are serving a little less. They're eating portions that are actually in line with what they need. And if there's a few bites left behind, they are more than happy to save it or trash it. But as soon as their parents come to visit, or they go somewhere with their parents, or some interaction happens with family, all of a sudden they're cleaning their plate again.
And they're wondering what the heck is going on. And when we really dig into it, they realize they don't want to upset their parents. They don't want to make them mad. Not even knowing if that's still something that would. It's possible, right? Old habits die hard, even for our folks. But it's so interesting how that all comes back in that environment. Sometimes it's about prolonging pleasure. Maybe your lunch hour is the only break you get, again, before you have to work a few more hours, get off, go home, and do a bunch more shit. So it's the only rest you get. Same thing at night. Prolonging that dinner because you know you gotta tuck those kids into bed and switch the laundry and do all the things. If you're eating, no one can bother you. If you're eating, you're busy. No one can ask anything of you because everybody's gotta eat, right? Clearly, you are occupied. Now, some people will argue with me and say, well, no, my email's always going off during my lunch hour. My boss expects blah, 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 blah. That's a culture issue. We can talk about that, but not today. Today, we're talking about you. What is really going on when you are overeating at a meal? Is it because you paid for it? Is it because you don't like to waste? Because you feel guilty? Is it because you need a break and you don't know how to give yourself one? Is it because we lack boundaries and this is the only time we really get to ourselves without having to feel like we should be doing something else? Is it the way we give ourselves rest? You might be saying, well, Steph, I ate because I wanted it. It's not that deep. I don't have these problems. I got good boundaries, have a good support system. I don't have to do all that bullshit. I just eat because it tastes so good. That's true. It may not be some big, deep emotional pit that you're avoiding. Totally could be 100% desire. But guess what desire is, my friend? That is a fucking emotion too. Desire is a feeling, something that we want, something that we experience. And when we have desire, oftentimes we look for ways to fulfill that need. And if the desire is for food, well, here you are, overeating it. Hell, sometimes you have a habit of overeating that started as an emotional eating urge and just remained long after the problem has already been solved. If you take one look at Gottman's feeling wheel, you will see that there are many more emotions than the umbrella ones, and the specificity matters. It matters that we take this apart and really understand under the umbrella of these bigger emotions, what is really going on? What are we really feeling? We can feel angry, but are we really insecure? Are we really feeling inadequate? Are we feeling undervalued or not appreciated? When you can recognize your emotional eating patterns, you can change them by learning to acknowledge and meet your truest needs. Sometimes the need is to feel disappointment, worry, fear, insecurity, or desire. You may not be able to solve every feeling right away, but that's how it's supposed to be. Our feelings are our compass, our guides. They're our teachers. They let us know what is wrong in our world so that we don't continue to repeat the same mistakes and go down the same path over and over that keeps us frustrated and overwhelmed. Let me give you an example of that because that sounds really big and airy and esoteric and like, yes, I get it, whatever, but tell me what that really means. So here you go. If you are feeling insecure that your partner doesn't find you attractive, for example, then you get an urge to eat and you may not realize that the urge for food is really an urge to distract yourself and bury the insecurity because you feel powerless to control your partner's feelings toward you. Now that's big, right? That's really digging in deep here. Maybe you're like, that's a stretch, Steph, but stay with me. If you stop and you don't eat when the urge hits, you just press the pause button and you listen to what is going on in your mind. You just hear it. You will learn about what you're really hungry for. In this example, it would probably be safety, security, confidence, and reassurance. It doesn't matter why you don't think that your partner finds you attractive or whether or not they actually do. This is irrelevant to your need. If you knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that they did find you attractive, your thoughts would be, I'm safe. Nobody needs to avoid feeling safe, secure. But since you're uncertain, you need to find ways to remind yourself that you are safe, even if your biggest fear is true. Maybe they actually no longer find you attractive. So how do you meet your need for safety in that moment without food and without needing to control the emotional experience of someone else, in this case, your partner? How the fuck do we actually do this? It's easier said than done, right? The first step is understanding what you're feeling in the first place. And then you've got to develop the emotional skill set to work through this, to have your own back, to figure this out, or to feel all of those feelings and then address the problem, to have the conversation with your partner and say, hey, here's how I'm feeling. Help me out here. Is it true? Is it not true? And decide what you want to do from that place. Maybe they come to you and say, hey, it is absolutely true. Your feeling is correct. That's the biggest fear, right? Is that you'll find out that it's true. Well, if you do, what do you want to do from that place? Do you want to leave? Do you want to stay and work on it? Do you want to figure it out? What would you make that mean about you if you found out that it was accurate? That's where the work really is. And I would love to be able to walk you through all of this just on a podcast episode. And hell, if you want to, shoot me an email. Let me know. I'll bring you on the podcast. We'll coach on some of these issues and we'll do it live. That would be amazing. So imagine yourself being able to be coached through these things, to have help uncovering your feelings-driven urges and have a shortcut to solving them in real time, to pull back the curtain and strip away the layers of doubt and fear and insecurity and all of these things that keep driving us to this habit of overeating and self-sabotage so we can move past it. That is what we do in coaching. We get to the root of the overeating habit quickly and solve it so you can go from eating like an asshole without understanding why the hell you continue to do this to handling your shit like a pro so that you can drop the emotional weight that keeps piling on the physical weight. That is when everything changes. If you want to get some free coaching and learn the exact tools that I use to help people just like you stop overeating, then mark your calendar for April 18th. Leslie Hooper and I are hosting a live training on the 3 pillars for lifelong weight loss, and you don't want to miss it. If you can't join us live, no sweat. Register anyway, and we'll send you the replay. All that information, as always, is in the show notes. All right, that is all I have for you today. I hope you took one or two things from this that you can start to think about and begin noticing how your emotions are driving your urge to eat when you aren't hungry, and eat past enough at your meals until you're full and miserable, and then you're over here feeling like something is wrong with you. If you enjoyed this episode, do the cool thing by leaving me a rating and review for the podcast. It helps me so much more than you know. Another way to support me in this work is to share. Screenshot this episode, share it on social media. Even if you only have a few friends that might be paying attention to your stories or whatever, you never know who needs this message. And you might be delivering it at the perfect time. If you do that, tag me so that I can come by and say thank you so much. If you have any questions or thoughts on this episode, ideas for future episodes, or want to know how we can work together one-on-one, my inbox is always, always open for you. And all that contact information is in the show notes. We'll see you next week. Bye.